Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a chemical spill into the Elk River just north of Charleston, West Virginia, that has resulted in 300,000 local residents not having access to safe water to drink or bathe in for 4 days. David Gutman, a staff writer with the Charleston Gazette, joins us to discuss the role of the company that has existed in its current form for less than 2 weeks, responsible for the contamination, Freedom Industries, one of whose founders was charged in 2005 for failing to pay more than $200,000 in income tax, and who in 1987 pleaded guilty to selling between 10 and 12 ounces of cocaine. Then we will speak with Russian-American journalist Masha Gessen, who wrote the searing expose of Russia's president, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. We will discuss her latest book, Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot, and Putin's recent gestures of magnanimity in releasing Mikhail Khodorkovsky from prison after 10 years. Then on December the 23rd, two of the members of Pussy Riot, who were given 2-year prison sentences from a Soviet gulag ahead of Putin's showcase event, the upcoming Sochi Winter Olympics. Then finally, we'll look into the just-released report from the nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics, Millionaires Club. For the first time, most lawmakers are worth $1 million plus. An author of the report, Sarah Briner, the research director at the Center for Responsive Politics, joins us to discuss how the median net worth of our current 530 lawmakers as of May 2013 is $1,008,767, meaning that for the first time in our history, half of our representatives in Congress not only represent the 1%, they are the 1%. And joining us now is David Gutman, who's a writer for the Charleston Gazette, where he has just wrote the article, Freedom Industries Execs Are Longtime Colleagues. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Gutman.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
And this company, in its current form, is, 2 weeks old? That's Freedom Industries. So what was the reshuffle about?
Well, it's still a little unclear right now. On the last day of 2013, four companies merged into Freedom Industries. Freedom Industries already existed, and it merged with three other companies, two of which are right here in the Charleston area. They're called Etowah River Terminal and Poca Blending. And it is actually the Etowah River Terminal is the spot where the chemical leak happened.
And the chemical itself apparently is used in washing coal. What's that process about?
The chemical is, yes, it's used in processing coal. It's sometimes called a sudsing agent. The big thing is we know very, very little about the chemical. It's called crude MCHM. And the Centers for Disease Control is now saying that water is safe if it has less than one part per million of crude MCHM, although it seems that it's a little unclear where they got that number from, and it seems that that number is based on just one study done by a private company in 1990.
So let's turn to Freedom Industries and the work that you've done in uncovering its executives and their history. Let's start with Kathy Stover Kennedy, the girlfriend of Freedom Industries executive Dennis P. Farrell. She was the first to go public. This leak was first detected, I believe, at 4 p.m. On Thursday. At the plant that's just downriver from the leak that supplies the water to the neighborhood, they shut down. When did they shut down?
So it's the timeline is a little unclear. The State Department of Environmental Protection was getting reports that there was a licorice odor in the area as early as 8:15 on Thursday morning. We now know that the licorice odor was caused by the chemical leak. Freedom Industries, in their one kind of official public statement, said that they discovered the leak. Two workers discovered the leak at 10:30 on Thursday morning. So, you know, over 2 hours after we were out deep, the state government was already getting complaints. They said that when they discovered it, they immediately began containment measures and reported it to the state authorities. That is also in conflict with what state authorities have said, who said that when they arrived on the scene around noon, containment was not going on, and the spill had still not been reported.
But the first spokesperson for Freedom Industries was this girlfriend of the executive.
Well, I think it's a little unfair to call her a spokesperson. She has been the only person to kind of say, well, other than a brief press conference with the Freedom Industry president, she has been the only person connected to Freedom Industries to say anything. But what she said was written on her personal Facebook page, and so, you know, she certainly said it, and she said things defending the company and her boyfriend, who's a company executive, but it, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call it an official statement from the company.
But what she said is on her Facebook page, "I'm not asking for anyone's sympathy, but a little empathy wouldn't hurt. And just so you know, the boys at the plant made and drank coffee this morning. I showered and brushed my teeth this morning, and I'm just fine." How many other people have taken her advice on that?
Gosh, I hope not too many, because you know, state, the governor, the water company, everybody is still saying, you know, there is a do not use order in effect for parts of 9 counties in West Virginia, covering about 300,000 residents who get their water from West Virginia American Water Company. And do not use doesn't mean just don't drink the water. It means don't wash your hands, don't wash clothes, don't wash dishes. Do not boil it. Don't cook with it. Don't do anything except flush the toilets.
And certainly not brush your teeth.
Absolutely not. No.
So, again, I'm speaking with David Gutman, his reporter with the Charleston Gazette, where he just wrote the article, "Freedom Industries Execs Are Longtime Colleagues." So let's talk about this fellow, the co-founder of the company, Carl L. Kennedy. Along with Gary Southern that you mentioned, who made a brief statement. He apparently, according to your reporting, in 2005, federal prosecutors charged him with failing to pay more than $200,000 in income tax. And in 1987, he pleaded guilty to selling between 10 and 12 ounces of cocaine. Where is he now, this fellow?
That's a good question. He is decidedly below the radar right now. We've been unable to contact him or even determine if he is still in the Charleston area. He is still listed on the with the West Virginia Secretary of State as the incorporator of Freedom Industries, although he's not listed on Freedom Industries' website. And before Freedom Industries completely stopped answering their phones, a woman who answered the phone there said that he has not been with Freedom Industries for years, although he did, in his bankruptcy filing in 2005, he did list that he was the owner of 5% of Freedom Industries.
So what's but in terms of the warning to all of the people, 300,000 residents in this neighborhood are still without water. Apparently it's been difficult for people to get water. It really sort of shows you, I guess, and you're living through this, are you not, David? And it shows you, I suppose, just how basically dependent we are on such a simple thing as clean and safe water. Is that the wake-up call for everybody? Because even the government itself, in issuing these warnings, the government is shut down, is it not?
No, it is not. No, it is not officially shut down. State government, I believe, is scheduled to be open for business tomorrow, although the state legislature is still kind of in flux as to what they're doing tomorrow. But yeah, you know, this makes you realize how many things you use water for. The federal and state and local officials have actually been quite good in setting up water distribution sites all over the affected area. They've brought in tankers from neighboring states with water, and they've brought in, you know, tractor trailers and pallets full of bottled water. So there, you know, there at least haven't been many reports of people not having water to drink. But you know, it's tough to wash your hands with a bottle of water. It's almost impossible to take a shower with a bottle of water. You can't really wash your dishes with a bottle of water. You certainly can't wash your clothes with a bottle of water. So yeah, it is decidedly inconvenient to not have any running water.
So lots of 5 o'clock shadows around, right? People haven't shaved.
Seems like the city is getting a little riper as the days go by.
Well, obviously, it's not a laughing matter, and it's a very serious matter. And David Gutman, again, a reporter with the Charleston Gazette, Do you have any idea of how many people drank that water before? I mean, from the time it was first detected, the licorice smell, to the time that the first warning came out was what, how many hours?
Well, I mean, as I said, the first licorice smells were reported not in the water, but just in the air, in the area, at around 8:15 Thursday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And according to West Virginia American Water Company, they, around 4 o'clock that afternoon, was when they first detected the licorice odor in the water that was coming through the water treatment plant. And then pretty soon after that, around 5 o'clock Thursday, the do not use order went into effect. So, you know, we're talking of a span of, you know, 9 hours between when smells in the air were noticed and until the do not use order went into effect. And, you know, who knows how much longer after 5 o'clock until everybody, you know, it takes a minute to get that kind of order out to just, you know, from not everybody's watching TV or reading the newspaper constantly. So.
So it's almost a whole working day of contaminated water, so it's difficult to determine how many people either drank it, washed their clothes, showered, or brushed their teeth in it, right?
It is. I mean, I can tell you that I went to get a sip of the water fountain at work here on Thursday. I think it was around 4 o'clock on Thursday, and took a sip, and it tasted kind of like Robitussin, and that was the last sip of water I've had since.
So, and there aren't any peer review studies on this chemical, are there, that are that definitive, particularly in terms of how many parts per million are permissible?
That is correct. There are no peer reviewed studies. There is one non peer reviewed study from a company called Eastman Management, which makes this chemical, and they issued a study in 1990, and that's kind of what the Centers for Disease Control have been working off of as they've tried to kind of, I guess, I don't know, cobble together a safe limit for how much of this chemical is safe.
So what is the connection then with Freedom Industries and the coal industry? Because there have been quite a lot of reporting, particularly from a colleague of yours, there at the Charleston Gazette, is it Mike Elk Jr.? Is that right?
No, he is not at the Gazette.
Oh, he's not at the Gazette.
Ken Moore Jr.
Ken Moore Jr. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. He has been covering some of the characters in the coal industry. Many of whom have sued him. What is the connection between this? In this company and the coal industry, apart from the fact that the chemical is used to in processing coal or washing coal, which I take it is the process.
Right. Well, I mean, the Freedom industry is in large part owes its existence to the coal industry. Much of what they do is distributing chemicals that are used in mining. Beyond that, I mean, specific ties to specific coal mines and things like that, I think we're not quite sure yet. But, you know, certainly mining is a big industry here in West Virginia, and there are a number of, you know, firms like Freedom Industry that are here to serve the mining industry.
And the Eastman Chemical Company that makes the chemicals, of course, they are the famous Eastman Kodak Company from Rochester, I believe.
That I'm not sure of.
Right. Well, I think they were founded by the same person.
Okay.
But so what then, I mean, you've got, there's no sense when this is going to end, right? And how much can the, what's the process of dilution that's going on? I mean, how...
Well, we hope to learn more about that. There's a press conference scheduled with the governor and emergency officials and the water company scheduled for 4 o'clock, so in about an hour and 45 minutes. What they told us last night was that they need 24 consecutive hours of testing water samples, and they need 24 straight hours of all of those water samples to be below one part per million before they can begin flushing the system. And then once they begin flushing the system, we were told it could take, quote, several days before water is restored. The samples released by the governor's office last night, they released 18 water samples, and 10 of them were below the 1 parts per million threshold, although, but 8 of them were still above. And that is kind of last, that was around 9 o'clock last night, and that is the last word we've had.
So before you use your drinking fountain at work, I mean, what are you going to do? Flush it out too? I mean, it's one thing, right, for the company to flush the system, but doesn't it require every consumer to flush the system?
That is also information we're still waiting on from both the government officials and the water company. They have said we are going to flush the system, and then once that is done, they said they're going to give out specific instructions on what everybody should do, and they kind of indicated it would be something like turn on your hot water for 20 minutes and then turn on your cold water for 20 minutes. But, you know, it was very vague, and they also stressed that these are not things you should be doing yet because that will just disrupt their flushing. So right now we're doing nothing. Sometime in the future, everybody will be doing some sort of personal flushing, if you will, but we're not exactly sure what it'll involve.
Well, David Gutman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with David Gutman, who's a reporter for the Charleston Gazette, where he just wrote the article, Freedom Industries Execs, a longtime colleague. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with Marcia Gessen, the author of the new book, Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot.